All right, good morning, everybody. So I'd like to thank Dr. Godin and Dr. Kulis for a really nice sort of framing of some of the issues that we're talking about today. I actually have no conflict of interest to disclose, and my name is Victoria Ojeda, and I'm based at UC San Diego. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors on this paper, which is Dr. Beth Hahn, Mr. Juan Albertorio, who's here today, Dr. Kirsten Reinschmidt, and also, this work was funded through the California Office of Binational Border Health, and we received in-kind support from both SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Service Agency, as well as the National Center for Health Statistics. So just by way of background, actually, this this project is part of a larger collaboration between NCHS and the different state health departments, specifically the offices of Binational Border Health that are present across California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas. And we were asked before taking a position at UCSD. I was a social epidemiologist at the Office of Border Health in San Diego. And so we were asked to work with other agencies to compile a report across all the border states and different health issues, access to care, infectious diseases, maternal and child health, and so forth. One area that came out that was certainly needing some attention was mental health and substance use, and so I worked with my colleagues on putting this chapter together. I'm only going to present some highlights today because the chapter itself isn't very long, but there are a lot of charts and tables in there. So if you're interested, the report will be eventually published by the U.S.-Mexico Border Health Commission out of the federal DHHS, but because of approval processes, it takes quite some time to get that out. And so if you're interested, I'd be happy to share our results, at least the full chapter of this of these findings with you. So, okay. Thanks. So I'm not going to talk too much about why we care about mental health and substance use, but essentially, my predecessors here have alluded to the fact that there's direct social costs in terms of outlays for treatment. Families invest economic resources and other resources as well in treating individuals that have mental illness. There's certainly labor market impacts, which include reduced participation in the labor market, which may be seen as either not working, reduced hours, absenteeism, and then for individuals that are employed, you might see reduced productivity. And there is also reduced quality of life for the individuals. They might become more disconnected from their friends and social networks. And in the sort of worst case scenario, we might see a person, committing suicide, and death is certainly one of the outcomes for untreated mental illness. And so over the last few years, at least these last two decades, we've seen that mental health and substance use is really becoming a public policy priority. The Surgeon General had released two reports focusing on mental health within a larger population context, and then focusing on race and ethnicity in a subsequent report. And then more recently, in 2003, there was a new Freedom Commission on Mental Health. So this has sort of been giving an impetus, and we'd like to continue highlighting this issue. In terms of prior research, many of my other colleagues have already identified disparities by race and ethnicity and nativity as well. And these have really been approached from a national perspective. So next. So really what is missing and what has been missing is information on the U.S.-Mexico border. And so today I'll be talking a little bit about the prevalence of mental illness and substance use in our communities, as well as prevalence of utilization of services, mental health services, and substance use. And so as I alluded to earlier, the border region is composed of four states on the U.S. side, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. And next. In terms of our data sources, we were very lucky to be able to work with SAMHSA, with Dr. Beth Hahn there, and we're grateful that they were able to do these analyses for us. They compiled 2002 through 2005, so in other words, I think 4 years of data for us that's based on the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. And for those of you that aren't familiar with this data set, it's really the nation's source of information on trends in drug use for for population ages 12 and older. And our study actually focuses on adults ages 18 and older because they don't collect information on service utilization for adolescents. But it's a very rich data source, and it is publicly available. And so I certainly encourage you to use it if possible. One of the caveats is that the data are entirely de-identified, and so the reason we couldn't do our own analysis was because they, in the public use files, they exclude geographic indicators, which means that for our study, you know, since we're focusing on the border, we didn't have access to state data or county data, and so that was a big limitation. And then, and that's why I'm saying we were quite lucky to be able to collaborate with SAMHSA on this study. Next. So some of the measures that I'm talking about today are serious psychological distress, and on the right hand of the slide here, you'll see a brief definition. And so some of you may be familiar with this. It comes out of the K6 by Ron Kessler at Harvard, and it's really a nonspecific measure of distress. And it used to be called serious mental illness, but really it's not picking up schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, but more anxiety and depression is what is felt that this measure is representing. And so it's supposed to be representative also of impairment in activities of daily living. We're also looking at mental health treatment, which is the use of inpatient or outpatient care or even psychotropic drugs. We're also looking at unmet need for mental health care, which we define as reporting a need for mental health treatment and then not getting that care. Substance use treatment is the use of any services which are designed to stop illicit drug and alcohol use. So that could be based in communities. Treatment services to hospital care, so it's really the wide range of services. In terms of illicit drugs, we looked at the combination of all of these drugs, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, inhalants, and non-prescription or use of prescription medications in a that were non-prescribed, not prescribed medically. And then, okay, thanks. Okay, so just to get into some of our findings here, I've presented here both the U.S. estimates so that you can see sort of where the border counties fit. And so what our colleagues have done is aggregated the border counties from SAMHSA because it's a stratified sample. So they were able to pick out all the counties that are on the border, which is considered within, I think, a 60-mile radius of the international dividing line between Mexico and U.S. And so those are sort of on the right of the two sets of bars. And the first set describes serious psychological distress, again, the K6 indicators. And in the blue bars, you'll see that that the Hispanics in the border counties have a slightly higher rate of serious psychological distress compared to non-Hispanics. And non-Hispanics is really everybody else in the sample. I've also included the confidence interval, so you'll see that they do overlap. And I think, you know, really one of our biggest challenges is having small sample sizes in the region, so we're not seeing a lot of significant differences, but the data, you know, are here nevertheless. On the right-hand side is the major depressive episode, and the border counties are very similar in terms of Hispanic and non-Hispanic rates of depression, about almost 6%. Next. In terms of we also were able to disaggregate the data by nativity. So we've got U.S.-born Hispanics versus U.S.-born non-Hispanics, and immigrant Hispanics and immigrant non-Hispanics. And so I'll call your attention to the graphs on the right. And you can see that in terms of the U.S.-born Hispanics, which is the dark gold bar, we've got 13%. And in terms of the immigrant Hispanics, it's 12% that are reporting serious psychological distress. So again, the rates are similar, but slightly more elevated for the U.S.-born Hispanics. And in terms of differences between U.S.-born individuals, certainly you're seeing higher rates for the U.S.-born Hispanics compared to their non-Hispanic counterparts. And so we also didn't have enough of a sample size for immigrant non-Hispanics, so we're not able to provide data for them. Now, in terms of service utilization and unmet need, this graphic here provides information for those two measures. And what we're seeing here is that Hispanics are demonstrating a significantly lower rate of utilization of mental health treatment services. So we've got 6.6% of Hispanics obtaining care compared to 14.5% of non-Hispanics. And this is probably in the range that you would expect, or at least in the direction that you would expect based on the national data as well. In terms of unmet need, again, these are individuals that who are perceiving a need for care but not actually getting any treatment. And you'll see that there are virtually no differences between Hispanics and non-Hispanics. In terms of the utilization of treatment, that's probably due as well to lack of any health insurance coverage. So, next. In terms of this is the same data, the mental health service treatment now broken out by nativity. And again, on the right-hand side, you see a very similar pattern, you know, in terms of the U.S.-born Hispanics at a significantly lower rate compared to their non-Hispanic counterparts, 8.6 to 14.8. But if you'll notice, what we're seeing as well is that the U.S.-born Hispanics are at a slightly higher advantage in terms of accessing care compared to their immigrant counterparts. And so those are the two blue bars. So you've got the kind of aqua, and then the very, very light blue, the third bar towards the end. So it's almost twice as many U.S.-born Hispanics are able to access care compared to their immigrant counterparts. Next. And in terms of illicit drug use, this is a lifetime estimate. We see, you know, some protective effect here, and I've done this, you know, by nativity, so that you see U.S.-born Hispanics are slightly lower in terms of utilization of drugs, 43 compared to their non-Hispanic counterparts, 52%. But you'll see, again, there's a protective effect of being an immigrant here in terms of utilization. So immigrant Hispanics are significantly less likely than their U.S.-born counterparts to be consuming illicit drugs. So that's 25%. It's in the third bar there. Thank you. And in terms of substance use treatment, we noticed that it's very, very low across all groups, with the highest rate, you know, being the U.S.-born non-Hispanics accessing it at 7.6%, and virtually no differences between U.S.-born and immigrant Hispanics. So just to wrap up, I wanted to kind of point out a couple of, as I mentioned, limitations in terms of our data. Certainly, we need to be able to collect better data. I think one issue would be to start making available geographically based indicators available in public use data sets, such as the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. That would be very helpful, as well as just collecting larger data sets for the border region, and that will help states and their communities better identify sort of where the gaps are and where treatment and resources needed to be allocated, especially right now, given that we're in a very much resource-constrained setting, you know, with economic demands placed on all communities. And so so being able to really target those resources is very important. I'd like to just share with you some results from another study I did. I was conducting a social marketing analysis of the border communities in here in California. And we learned that one creative approach to creating awareness and in residents of border communities is to have a radio talk show program where people can call in and they'll, you know, pick a health topic for the day that it really centers around mental health issues, but they're not pitching it as a mental health issue because of the stigma. So they really have tried to create availability and awareness of resources in the community of mental illness, but kind of, I think, not disguised, but, you know, just making it in a way that's maybe more culturally appropriate and sensitive to the community. So I thought that was a really nice approach. And another thing that we're seeing here in the border is collaboration with psychiatrists and other kind of providers from Mexico, which would be able to follow up with patients, whether that's because of linguistic English proficiency issues, or another big challenge that we've got in the border is providing care to unauthorized immigrants. And so by establishing collaborations with providers in Mexico, that's been sort of one approach that, that providers have been able to take to improving access to care. And so another strategy that you might have heard about that's being explored in California is the creation of binational health insurance programs. And it's not really clear how they would implement these programs, but if they do work, this might be one avenue to increasing access to care as well for populations that are really unserved by the current medical system. So thank you very much. Thank you.